Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Trinity's podcast, What's the Point?, where we are talking about what's the point of a whole lot of things, church. In this series, we're talking about what's the point of Holy Week, and today we're diving deeper into Maundy Thursday. I am here. So I'm Katie O'Connell. For those who don't know, I'm the digital communications coordinator, and I'm here with Heather Day.
Hi, Katie. Hi. I'm so excited that you're doing the intro. You're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you. I don't have a script in front of me, so
you're pulling it off trying. Well.
Thank you. And I'm here with Pastor Tom Westcott.
You have so much more energy than I when I do this. Hired.
You have a better radio voice, though, so.
And a face for radio, too. Ba-da, ba-da,
His okay. Words, not ours. All right. So before we get into all the nerdery, I have to ask, we're going to start with Heather. Heather, what is your Last Supper?
My Last Supper. Okay. I thought about this.
Yeah.
Feel like I didn't come up with a great answer. But the thing that I kept coming back to was a really good grilled cheese sandwich.
Ooh.
Like Texas toast, white bread, like maybe a couple different kinds of cheese, but definitely some of it being like the fake cheese.
Oh, 100%.
We call it fake cheese when you have to like unwrap the plastic wrap around it.
Because it's American.
American fake cheese. So yeah, that's what I keep coming back to. It's just a really good grilled cheese sandwich.
That's a good answer. Now, are you a grilled cheese and soup kind of person, or would you just do the grilled cheese?
It's an ongoing conversation in my house. Mm-hmm. What kind of soup to have with the grilled cheese? Because the answer is yes. You have soup with grilled cheese.
Yeah.
I prefer chicken noodle soup with my grilled cheese. My husband definitely prefers tomato soup with his grilled cheese. I can do either, but I really like the chicken.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, are we talking like a more brothy chicken noodle soup or creamy?
I mean, I could do either. I definitely grew up with grilled cheese and with Velveeta on it. And then like Campbell's chicken noodle soup.
Okay.
So all broth.
This episode of What's the Point is brought to you by Velveeta cheese. It's real. We promise. I've never had a grilled cheese with anything but tomato soup, so I'm going to have to try that.
I have, but I'm kind of with Herschel. It's not the same for me. I'm not opposed to it. I think I like thicker, creamy things with my grilled cheese, like soups.
That's fine. I didn't like tomato soup for most of my life.
Yeah, that's fair.
Till recently, so it wasn't ever really an option.
Yeah, but that's fair.
There you go.
All right. Tom, what's your Last Supper?
Well,
something smoked.
I was going to say anything smoked or grilled, really. Mm-hmm. But my guilty pleasure, like in the summer, I could probably eat a brat or a different kind of brat sausagey type thing any day of the week. Like,
sounds good.
Just give me beer brat with mustard and some,
sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut, that's the one I'm looking for. A nice, like, bakery fresh bun.
Ugh. Yeah.
I am in. That's it.
Fun fact, I only recently became a brat person.
Oh.
Like, I did not like them growing up. And I think it's because it was missing the sauerkraut.
Ooh.
But sauerkraut was always one of those foods where I was like, that looks not good. But then I tried it for the first time like 2 years ago maybe, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's pickles, but not like it's and I didn't know that. I didn't know sauerkraut was pickled cabbage or whatever. I was like, oh my gosh, this is a game changer. It turns out I like it, so I started putting that on my brats, and game changer.
All right.
So happy for you.
Thank you.
But that's not your Last Supper.
That is not my Last Supper.
What is your Last Supper, Katie?
Okay, are you guys ready?
We're so ready.
Kind of a wild ride.
I see a lot of notes on her sheet.
I want a buffet.
It's the Last Supper. Why not?
But I want a buffet of like all the fresh seafood. I want crab legs, and I want them to be smothered in melted butter. Like, oh, I want them drowning in melted butter along with a lobster tail. I want scallops. I want oysters. But then I also really want a side of macaroni and cheese with it. And I don't care if it's homemade. I don't care if it's craft. I just, that's what I want.
Okay. Have you mm-hmm. seen the show The Good Place?
Yes.
Because you're really making me think of Eleanor Shellstrap and how much she loves shrimp. That she gets so a vending fair. Machine of shrimp.
Oh, that would, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yep, I go ham on shrimp. It's so good. All right.
So Maundy Thursday is all about Jesus's Last Supper. And I think it's important we talk about, well, what exactly is going on here for this Last Supper? Why is Jesus in Jerusalem? And why is he gathered with his disciples and all
he
of that?
He wants dinner with all of his best buddies.
Yeah. Yeah, but who would actually want to do that? No, I'm just kidding.
clearly, these 12.
So this whole reason why they've gathered is for Passover. And Passover is an event that happens way back in the book of Exodus. That's in the Old Testament, by the way. You can find it in Exodus 11. And essentially what happens is that Moses is trying to get the Hebrews out of Egypt, and they're enslaved currently by the Pharaoh. And so there's been plague upon plague upon plague with boils and locusts and frogs, and still Pharaoh's like, I will not let your people go. Pharaoh, okay, no.
Oh, baby, let my people go.
Ooh. Okay, all right. We can edit in Herschel Day for that one. Uh-huh. This is the final plague where death will visit Egypt. And so, I'm going to just quote Moses here. About midnight, I will go out through Egypt, and every firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. From the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne to the firstborn of the female slave who is behind the handmill and all the firstborn of the livestock. And then there will be a loud cry throughout the whole land of Egypt, such as never been or will ever be again. So essentially, God is saying through Moses, let my people go or the firstborn will die. And so the marker for death to Passover was some lamb's blood on the doorposts. And so if you didn't have that, then the angel would, or the whatever, death would visit you. But if you had the blood posted of the lamb, it mm-hmm. pass over you. Mm-hmm. And so every year, the Hebrews celebrate, or now we can call them the Jewish people, celebrate Passover to remember that God had delivered them from slavery in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus and his pals are gathering in Jerusalem for this Passover feast. And so there's lots of connections that folks make about is who Jesus is in relationship to this lamb's blood that's posted on the doorpost and all that sort of stuff. But that's the context here, that the Israelites are celebrating liberation from slavery and that God's promises are for sure. Like, God fulfills God's promises. And so folks are waiting now for a Messiah. So that's kind of like the scene is set. And then we have the Last Supper.
Okay, but so this Last Supper scene happens in all four Gospels, right? But it's a little different because, you know, we got to keep it interesting. So mm-hmm. let's make sure everybody tells a little bit different story. So correct me if I'm wrong, but in three of those Last Supper scenes, we get the traditional supper part where Jesus mm-hmm. gives the bread and the wine.
Yep. But the language is not the same.
Oh.
And the language that we use in church is not from the Gospels. It's from Paul, mostly.
Oh.
Because why not?
Okay. Okay, but then in the book of John, there's not this, I mean, the scene is there, but it's totally different. And instead, that's the scene where Jesus washes the feet of his disciples.
That is correct.
So that only shows up once. So here's what I think is really interesting about Maundy Thursday. Now, I don't know about anybody else, if you've been to a church that has done a foot washing service, but sometimes during Maundy Thursday services, there is, you know, a time where people come up and they get their feet washed. I don't know if when that's ever happened at Trinity. I don't remember ever being at one here.
You've been here longer than we have.
We've established that. Thank you. right, but like, that just, it feels like such a profound thing to think about Jesus washing the feet of his disciples. And, you know, when kids talk about that in Sunday school and they're like, oh my gosh, that's so weird, like stinky. But what a profound thing that would be to wash the feet of someone that you usually sit next to in worship. And why don't we do that more?
Because feet.
Because feet.
Right? But you think about it, like, all right, so foot washing was practical, right?
Right.
People, I mean, I'm not a historian, but I'm imagining it'd be more of a sandal type of footwear.
Birkenstock.
Some Birks. For sure. So, but generally kind of dirty feet or dirtier than our socks and shoes.
Yep.
So foot washing, I could see, would be like part of like the culture. But what's really interesting to me is that I've read lots of commentaries that when Jesus does this, he's taking on the form of like the household slave.
Yeah.
And washing the disciples' feet. Like,
yeah.
To have your teacher, your rabbi, wash your feet was like, what? This is not what you do. It's supposed to be the other way around, right? At least like the student washed the teacher's feet.
Right.
So why don't we celebrate that, right? Is it just weird and confusing and communion is easy? We see it every week or every other week. Yeah. I wonder, like, if we were to do a foot washing today, I wonder what it would look like, but I don't think it'd be feet. I think it would be hands.
Yeah.
Well, and we did that, what was it? Maundy Thursday, the first year of COVID in 2020. We did, this must've been before either of you were here. But we, when we did a virtual service, Pastor Patrick did a hand washing at his home and encouraged people to do that at home.
Oh, that's cool.
But you think like, I think the symbolism is like, I've got my phone here. Like, I can send hate with my two thumbs so quickly around the world. Like, these hands need to be cleaned of, like, their...
I
think that might be an interesting thing to do.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, I do too. And what a way to just to... I don't know. I think, and I'm comparing the foot washing with communion, right? And like, Jesus doing the foot washing is, like you were saying, very symbolic. And I think it adds that extra bit of, I don't know, humanism, I guess. Like, it brings him to be just that much more human. And on our level, like, he's no better than we are, if that makes sense, or than the disciples were, whatever. And I think that's something that sticks out to the most to me, because when it comes to communion, you know, at least for us, only certain people can bless the bread and the wine, but kind of anybody can like give it out. But how many people other than like pastors do you really see, you know, doing like handing out the bread or the wine? Like, yes, we have volunteers to do that, but kind of the first one that you're going to run into is probably a pastor. So just like bringing it down that level of just saying like, hey, Jesus was no better than us. Like, we can we can help wash each other's hands. We can help wash each other's feet. It's just, I don't know. I don't know if any of that is making sense, but well, it's just.
It is, because you think of deacons in the ELCA.
Mm-hmm.
They are ordained to word and service.
Yeah.
And their stole, I'm not sure if that's the correct word, but it's like the pastor's stole is like around the neck, mm-hmm. and down the shoulders on each side. The deacon stole is like across the shoulder,
yeah.
like and across the chest. And I believe it's supposed to symbolize it being like a towel, like Jesus oh. washing the disciples' feet, so that they're called to word and service versus word and sacrament. But in word and service, it's to remember this foot washing mm-hmm. text as Jesus saying, love one another as I have loved you in this sure. act of service.
Yeah, sure. And I know that's one of the symbols of a deacon is a towel. And so sometimes when deacons get ordained, they might get a towel. Yeah, one story that I heard about the deacon stole that goes across their body is, yeah, to indicate that they are ordained in, you know, word and service is that mm-hmm. this stole, they can just kind of throw it over behind them and just get down to work. And, you know, so I can picture Jesus just like, you know, throwing something yeah. over his shoulder. And I just knocked my headphones off as I threw it over my shoulder. But yeah, Jesus throwing something over his shoulder and just getting down and washing his disciples' feet. Like, let's just do this down and yeah. dirty. Like, get down here in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we focus on that? Like,
right.
Why don't we celebrate that we are called to service? And I know, you know, that might be a little... some Lutheran allergies are getting aggravated right here. But we are called to serve, right? So mm-hmm. why not celebrate that and mm-hmm. use it as a call to serve?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Okay. Mm. So now do we get to talk about the part that I have notes about?
Yes, we can.
Well, this was Katie's big question, too. So
yeah.
I'm looking at Tom right now. In all the Gospels, or does this only come out in a couple Gospels? I'll keep talking and you can think about it. So Judas is Jesus's disciple who mm-hmm. goes on to betray him. Mm-hmm. And yet we see in the Gospels that Judas he's a part of the Last Supper.
He was there.
He was there.
He got communion.
He did. Yeah, he was a part of that.
Yeah.
And, okay, before, I know Katie wants to talk about this. Before you do, though, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
So this last Sunday, Pastor Tom and I met with a group of kids to talk about communion, kind of prepare mm-hmm. them for communion. And we watched a video from the Holy Moly series where Jesus... I'm sorry, Tom, could you do a what does Jesus sound like? So it's all gibberish, which the kids love. But one of the cool things about these videos is that a lot of it is in black and white, but then things get colored in, and the kids, as they watch more of these videos, they come to learn that the color shows that someone is filled with God's love mm. or has some sort of connection with God. Mm-hmm. So at the start of this Last Supper scenario, Jesus is the only one that's colored in and everyone else is black and white. Mm-hmm. And Jesus blesses the bread, blesses the wine, and passes it around. And as they take a bite or a drink, each person gets filled up with color. And the kids are like, oh yeah, cool. So okay, yep, they got that. And he passes it to Judas. Mm. And then there's a huge conversation between these kids. Did Judas take a bite of the bread? Mm. Because Judas stayed black and white.
Yeah.
He never got filled in with color. And so here's these kids watching this video and they're just like, well, he didn't take a drink. He didn't take a bite. It's because Judas didn't take a bite.
Oh.
Right? But if you watch it, he really did take a bite.
Right.
And yet he still didn't get colored in. And then, you know, we watch more of the video and they see that, you know, Judas is the one to betray Jesus.
Right.
Like, oh, now I get it.
Right.
But it was just a funny thing where these kids were really, really thinking about this and talking about, like, why didn't Judas turn colors like everyone else did?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But Judas was there.
He was.
He got to have
He did.
He was at the Last Supper.
And I feel like that's something that we just don't. I don't know if it's if we don't focus on it, if we don't remember it, if it's not portrayed to us in movies, in media, you know, whatever. But I feel like that's something that we just like we know that Judas was there, but at the same time it just goes over our head and like is ignored, and you just think, okay, yeah, Judas is the one who, you know, betrayed Jesus, that's that, and then he runs off. But he was there. He got communion. Like Jesus was literally like, here, like, here's my body, here's my blood. And I know fully well that you're going to betray me, but I'm going to put that behind me right now because you being here with me is more important than that. And us being here together and having this relationship is much more significant than you betraying me.
Mm-hmm. Which puts me at ease.
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh man, have I messed up in life, right?
Dude, same.
So if Judas can get communion and be in relationship with Jesus in such a way that they share a meal together, like, well, it eases me a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what does that say about how we should consider, you know, people who we might see as not being good people,
right?
Or, you know, worthy,
right,
of whatever. Like, well, if Jesus considered Judas to be, you know, worthy enough to be with him at that table, then who are we to turn anyone away?
Right. Well, and I think that's, so we touched on this in the last series with communion in the ELCA and all are welcome to the table and everything. But I think that's something that just as you were saying, Heather, it just speaks volumes, because it's like anybody, regardless of how we feel about them, can be in relationship with Jesus. And if this is how, if it's, you know, them showing up to church and them going up to take communion, why should we deny them that? Mm-hmm. You know?
But what if they're a jerk?
You know?
What if you don't like them?
That literally sounds like an us problem and not a them problem, because guess what? God still loves them and they still deserve to be in relation with Jesus.
So I had a college professor talk to me, and like when I figured out I was wanting to be a pastor, he said, "All right, Tom, like that's cool. Like, but what would you do in this situation," sort of thing? Because we were getting into the Lutheran confessions, as one does when they're about 22 years old. He said, "All right, here's a scenario I had, and I refused someone communion." Yeah. So the individual was having an affair with someone, and it was like the town pariah, and they were still involved with one another, and that professor, as a former pastor, had a conversation with both of them about, like, hey, everybody knows what's going on here. Perhaps you should figure out your marital relations with your current spouses. And they didn't care. They just kept on doing their thing. And so he came up for communion on Sunday, and he said, "I'm sorry, but I can't do that." Yeah. What would you have done?
I mean,
I honestly still would have communed them. I would have given them the communion, the bread and the wine, because it's not, I don't know, I guess for me, it's not my place to deny them at that. It's not my place to judge them for that, especially when it's, if I'm the one in front of everybody else, like, I don't know, it's just not my place.
Yeah, so, I totally get it.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of what I said, like, well, what about, aren't we just supposed to? And he said, well, they were tearing their families apart and their kids were suffering. Like, the biggest thing I could do was just to deny it in that moment. sure. and say no. As perhaps he was trying to take a drastic step. But I mean, I don't know if that's right or wrong. There's room for it in our, you know, technical confessions. Like, there's room for that. But should it be done?
I mean, I do love that when, you know, when we're church people are putting together a worship service, that if it's a worship service that includes communion, then somewhere in that worship service, there should be a forgiveness or a confession and forgiveness. And so, you know, you'll find that sometimes right at the beginning of the service, sometimes right before the communion. But to include that confession and forgiveness before you come and receive communion, I think that's, I guess I'm relating that to your story, Tom, because if this person continued in this illicit relationship and wasn't confessing, then then are they not in, you know, a right relationship and able to receive? I don't know.
Right. But the best part is that, I don't know. I don't know. Learning from that, I just hand out communion. Like nobody's business.
Like candy.
Like Jesus. Okay. Like
Jesus.
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 Oh boy. Okay, so so Maundy Thursday, besides this fun theological stuff, it has some trappings, if you will. So we have the foot washing bit, right? So that's like a thing we do. First communion.
A bit, as you say.
A bit.
The foot washing bit.
The communion bit.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then my favorite that I mentioned last episode is the stripping of the altar.
Yeah.
Bit.
Bet on that bit. Because, and we do it again, Jesus is whisked away by soldiers, and we just remember in taking all the stuff off the altar that we are to kind of just some of our baggage, perhaps, like, you know, refusing communion, perhaps should be put away, and we can focus on what's most important. And I don't know, I just, that has always stuck out to me since I was a kid, just like the stripping of the altar as something that is so different than my usual church experience. So like growing up at, after my grandfather's congregation, like it was a huge, like giant chancel area or the space around the altar, just huge, like 5 stories high. It was one of those big giant cathedral-esque type things. And there was always flowers. There's always like this royal type of feel to it. Like this is something special, like with the red carpet and all of that stuff, right? And even here at Trinity, there's a lot of adorning of the altar space. But all of that just gets taken away. And to me, that is just a stark contrast of our usual experience. And so I just, it sticks out to me that it's important.
Now, is it, because I haven't experienced Easter here yet or Holy Week or anything here, but I'm curious, is that done, is the stripping of the altar, is that done here in complete silence, or is there like music going in the background, or what happens?
It's usually in silence.
And I love that. I feel like I've experienced both ways. I could be wrong, but I love experiencing it in silence, because what a moment to just sit there and just kind of let everything go and just sit and be, and I don't know. It's just a beautiful moment.
You should see the Pastor Patrick and I like rehearse this whole thing. It's pretty funny.
God.
The stripping of the altar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, but no, you're right. It is an intentional time in which to just be.
Well, and I think that's one of the really beautiful things about all of Holy Week, is that we do things during Holy Week that we don't do the rest of the year. And when you are used to adornments and decorations and worship that is more or less the same every week, that when you do something different, like stripping the altar, that it gets your attention.
Yeah.
And so that is part of what makes Holy Week special, is that we're doing things that are different. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to miss the reason why it's different. I mean, we don't always, you know, think about it and understand mm-hmm. it, which is why we're kind of diving deeper into it. But you know, even little kids, if they go to church on Maundy Thursday or Good Friday, they'll know that it's different mm-hmm. than when they're normally there on Sunday mm-hmm. morning. Yeah, that's one of the cool things about Holy Week.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, it makes you think about mm-hmm. everything.
Everything. Mm-hmm. When it gives you that space to almost like, I don't know, this is what I was just thinking about as you were saying that too. Like, you get to watch everything be taken away, and you can lay everything in yourself out there and just let it go with all this stuff. Like, be put away. It doesn't need to be inside of you anymore. Mm. I don't know.
I like it.
All right. That's great stuff. Hey, what comes after Maundy Thursday?
Good Friday.
All right. That sounds like a great next episode.
I agree.
Sounds like a really good next episode.
Oh. Bah, oh. Bah, bah, bah. Oh.
You're welcome. So mm-hmm. when we post this episode, hopefully there's some place on the webpage or Facebook mm-hmm. comments that we can put a recipe for communion bread that yeah. we've used. Ooh, yeah. before.
Yes.
There's a great recipe that we've used. I know there's plenty of recipes, but mm-hmm. we'll post one. So if anyone wants to make their own communion bread.
Yeah.
Or just bread at home. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll make sure to post that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I've done, like, when the pandemic hit, I just did like a, I don't know, like a flatbread recipe, a skillet mm-hmm. flatbread mm-hmm. recipe. Man, it was a bop with some hummus. It was so good. My communion bread 2020 was great with hummus.
I don't think he used that word.
No,
right.
I didn't. I know I didn't use it correctly.
No, Tom likes to call things a bop.
It's so true.
He's trying.
No, communion bread specifically. So the Luther Seminary.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, it is so good.
With molasses uh-huh. in it.
Mm-hmm. I can't make it at home because it won't make it where it needs to be because it's so good.
Okay, well, we'll post that. Everybody yes. can try that at home.
Yep.
And if anybody has any questions, comments, mm-hmm. where can they send that?
They can send it to me. So you're going to send it to Katie, Katie, at trinity-ec.org. And... especially if you have any questions for our next series. We don't know what we're going to talk about yet, I don't think.
No, what's the point of you TBD?
Tell, yeah, yeah, you tell us. Yeah.
We need some suggestions. What do you want to hear us nerd out about?
Yeah. And thank you to everybody who's given us feedback so far on this podcast. We really appreciate it, and we appreciate knowing that people are listening. Anything else? Any final thoughts from either of you?
I think at the end of podcasts, you're supposed to say something like, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. So, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Follow us on Spotify.
Right? You can do that too. And share with friends.
Sure.
It's learning. We're learning.
We are learning. But until then, we can't wait for you guys to listen with us next week, where we talk about Good Friday. Have a great week, friends.